This is Washington Watch with Tony Perkins, your daily voice in Washington, D.C. on the issues of faith, family, and freedom. And now, here's your host, Family Research Council President Tony Perkins.
Merry Christmas and good afternoon. Welcome to Washington Watch. Coming up, a special edition of Washington Watch and all the activities and trappings of Christmas. It's easy to forget the origins of Christmas. I mean, the birth of Jesus Christ, the Son of God. I know most of you would say, well, that's what I focus on. I know. But with the exception of the nativity scene, we're prone to think more of shopping malls, parades, maybe even church services, rather than the barren hills of Bethlehem. Now, it is ironic that the message of peace and goodwill to men came to a place that today is in turmoil. And the remaining Christians who have not fled are living in fear in the Middle East. And today we're preparing for the celebration of Christmas here in the United States. But I want to take a closer look at the welfare of our brothers and sisters in the Middle East and elsewhere, and what we might be able to do now and in the days ahead to help restore the peace and goodwill to men in all places, including the Middle East. We'll be talking with Chris Mitchell, Middle East Bureau Chief for CBN News and host of Jerusalem Dateline. Dr. David Curry with Open Doors USA will give us an update on their efforts on behalf of Christians in the Middle East and elsewhere. And Pastor Stephen Corey will join us from Jerusalem. We'll also have an opportunity to visit with former Congressman Frank Wolf, who continues to champion religious liberty in the Middle East and elsewhere. The website, TonyPerkins.com, you can find out more about today's guest and our special topic by going to TonyPerkins.com. Also, some resources available for you there. If you're on Twitter, you can track me and keep up with me at T. Perkins. All right, we've all seen the headlines about the battle for Mosul and heard about the thousands of refugees in northern Iraq. We know it's a terrible situation, but even for the best-intentioned souls, the saturation of 24-hour news can desensitize any of us to the plight of the Christians whose lives and homes have been destroyed at the hands of ISIS over the past couple of years. Now, in August of 2014, nearly 60,000 people fled the Christian town of Karakush, just hours before ISIS overran the area. In October, the Kurdish military liberated the city, uncovering a trail of destruction and devastation left behind by the occupiers. Chris Mitchell, who is the Middle East Bureau Chief for CBN News and host of Jerusalem Dateline, visited Karakush a few weeks ago and joins us now to detail his firsthand assessment of what the returning Christians are up against in that area. Chris, welcome back to Washington Watch.
Tony, it's great to be with you again. And Merry Christmas.
Well, Merry Christmas to you. And I mean, you're there in Jerusalem, a special place to be at Christmas time, no doubt. Mm-hmm. But you, you've been traveling around the Middle East. You've been covering that area, not just Israel. But you were profoundly impacted by your recent trip to northern Iraq. Describe for us the devastation that you witnessed touring one of the largest churches in the Middle East.
Yeah, it really did. Was a profound experience, Tony. I had the opportunity to tour Karakush with Sister Diana, a Dominican nun who just took us through the town. We originally went to their main church called Immaculate Conception, and we saw that ISIS had burned the church for days. They had brought all the pews together and burned them. They had desecrated the altar, the Eucharist. They had destroyed most of the crosses inside the church. Next to the church, there was a courtyard, Tony, and they used that for target practice. And what they had also done, and this is probably one of the most moving things that I saw, is that they had taken all the books from the adjacent convent, they had brought them into the courtyard, and they burned them. And so all that's left there is right now a pile of ashes, sort of reminiscent of maybe what the Nazis did with the Nuremberg book burnings. And throughout the city, as we went from place to place, you could see just a trail of devastation. For example, we went to just some of the streets, and not only had ISIS burned or looted or destroyed many of the homes there, but because of the fight and the battle, because of coalition airstrikes, maybe half a block might be devastated and just rubble because of the airstrikes. We saw writing on the wall that would say, for example, we will crush the infidels, and the Islamic State will expand with the permission of Allah. And in particular, there seemed to be a fanatical hatred for the cross. Wherever we went, for example, we went to monasteries or churches, and every cross was seemed to be either removed or destroyed to some extent. It went so far as even in the cemetery where we went there, they had destroyed many of the plaques of the people that had been buried there. They opened some of the graves to loot some of the graves. And just from beginning to end of the places that we saw, it was an assault on Christianity, any Christian symbol. And basically, as a friend of mine had said one day, what's happening to Christians here in the Middle East, it's really a war on Jesus.
Chris, when you look at this and you look at the trail of destruction that was left behind, is there any question in your mind the evil that is driving and fueling ISIS?
No, it's just this fanatical hatred, and you just see from all the evidence and the trail that they left that this is just wickedness to a degree that I had never seen before in my life, and just a profoundly moving experience. We had the opportunity to meet a family, a couple who had their home had been destroyed in an airstrike, and they actually, and some of these people had left belongings and some of their literally life savings. They had $10,000 in Iraqi dinar that had been destroyed, and ISIS actually came into this family, took their three-year-old daughter out of her mother's lap, and never to be seen again. Who knows where this three-year-old daughter, perhaps maybe 5 years old now, is. But the wickedness and evil was laid bare for all to see, for those that have the opportunity to go in that town right now.
You're listening to Washington Watch. I'm Tony Perkins. Glad to have you along with us this afternoon. Chris Mitchell is my guest. He is with CBN News in Jerusalem. He is the Middle East Bureau Chief. We're talking about what's been taking place in northern Iraq with ISIS. And folks, this is really the, in many places, I know we think of Bethlehem, we think of the birthplace of Christianity, that's where Jesus was born. But some of these communities in Iraq are some of the first Christian communities that up until just recently have been continuing until ISIS came in to try to exterminate them. Now, Chris, the good news is that we see, and this is amazing to me, that we see a number of Christians returning to places like Karakush, determined to rebuild. Now, how realistic is it at this point, given that so many homes were destroyed, that so many lives were eliminated? What are the prospects of them rebuilding?
Well, it's a daunting challenge, Tony, and I think there's two things that they are asking for. First, if they come back, they're going to have an assurance that there's going to be a safe place to come back to, because they don't want another thing like ISIS to come along 1 year, 2 years later. And so that's the first thing they want, some measure and some assurance that they will be secure if they come back. And the other thing they'll have is they're going to need some help. This is a massive reconstruction effort that has to go on in northern Iraq for not only Christian towns, but for this whole area. And that would have to be, government assistance. And I believe there's a bill in Congress to help with that reconstruction. And Christians will have to be part of that that help and that aid and give them the support. I would say, Tony, right now, Christianity, as we've noted in the Middle East and especially in northern Iraq, is really in a balance right now because a lot of these peoples, when they go back to see their town, it can be overwhelming and discouraging. And they have to weigh the cost. Do we spend all the effort, time, money to go back and rebuild our town or our home, or do we immigrate to another country? And right now, that's a very difficult question for these people to answer. And I think that's why it's so important and incumbent, first of all, to be praying for these people and also to be helping support them and speaking out on their behalf to what the U.S. government can do to help them in their time of need.
And now, Chris, you can address this from both a spiritual, a religious standpoint, but also from a geopolitical standpoint. Why is it important that these longstanding Christian communities that have been there for literally centuries, all the way back to Jesus's own disciples carrying the message of the gospel to some of these regions, why is it important that they go back and rebuild these communities?
Well, I would think, Tony, first of all, from a spiritual point of view, and that's what Sister Diana had told us, is that they're really the salt and light of that place right now. And so I believe it's important that the witness of Jesus Christ would not be extinguished in that part of the region, and especially in that part of Iraq and that part of the Middle East. And I think that's the first thing, is that their witness needs to remain there. From a geopolitical point of view, I think these are people who are natural allies who would be more inclined to want a democratic state reinstated there. And I think these would be the people that we would want there to be part of the new Iraq or whatever comes after ISIS. So I think that's another reason why it's important for Christianity to be preserved in that part of the Middle East. And also people, one of the things I was asking, Tony, some of the people that I had talked to, some of the Christian ministries on the front line, including the Sister Diana, what do you need prayer for? And I was they were telling me, you know, they need prayer that the gospel would go forth. Also that many of these Christians who have had anything but a normal life in the past 2.5 years would have a normal life, but that they would be, as I said, salt and light, and that they would have help to be able to rebuild and restore their lives.
Chris, we just have a couple of minutes left together. I want to transition for just a moment as the Middle East Bureau Chief there for CBN News, located in Jerusalem. Your sense on the atmosphere there in Israel and the broader Middle East with the recent elections here in the United States and the election of Donald Trump as president. What's your sense there on the ground?
My sense is that it's going to be a huge change in the Middle East. I think for the last 8 years, we've seen kind of an appeasement in the Middle East. We've had a shift from our traditional allies, Saudi Arabia, Egypt, and Jordan, towards Iran. So I think people here in Israel, and particularly this government, are looking at the prospect of maybe renegotiating or sort of changing the Iranian nuclear deal to some extent. I think there is over 80% of Israelis, according to a recent poll, that believe that the Trump administration is going to be pro-Israel. I think our allies were maybe heartened by some of the signals they've been hearing from the Trump administration. And I think some of our adversaries, Iran, Russia, the Syrian government, are going to be taking a step back, and I think they're going to be recalculating exactly what a Trump administration means, and I think they're going to see, at least from early indications, that it's not going to be the kind of appeasement we've seen with the Obama administration, but a much more robust and standing tall, as it were, administration in the Middle East. And I think that bodes well for the region. There obviously will be conflicts, I would assure, but I think the appeasement that we've seen in the last 8 years has left the Middle East in a far more difficult and dangerous place.
It has. It is a mess, and it is going to take a lot, I think, to get it straightened out, if that can be done. It's always been a complex place, but it's even more so now. Chris Mitchell, thanks so much for joining us today. Great to talk with you.
Great to talk with you, Tony, and Merry Christmas to you and everybody that's listening right now.
All right. Merry Christmas there in Jerusalem. Chris Mitchell with CBN News. He is the Middle East Bureau Chief. To find out more, go to the website, tonyperkins.com. Great source of information for what's happening in the Middle East. All right, folks, don't go away. We're going to continue this special edition of Washington Watch when we come back. Dr. David Curry with Open Doors USA joins us. Don't go away. We're back right after this. Tony Perkins, President of the Family Research Council here, inviting you to join my wife, Luana, and me on an exciting adventure. Next July 29th, we'll board Holland America's a luxurious MS Uradam in Seattle for a 7-day cruise to Alaska. You'll be joined by other believers as we study God's Word and worship Him together in the midst of some of the most breathtaking beauty in all of God's creation. Alaska is truly awe-inspiring. From stunning wildlife such as humpback whales to the purple mountain majesties, America is known and loved for. You'll also hear the latest updates from Washington on the new Congress and administration. Come, fellowship, relax, worship, and explore with us on this memorable vacation experience that is sure to enrich your body, soul, and spirit. For more information or to book your Alaskan adventure, call 844-872-5155 or go to tonyperkins.com. Don't miss out. The number of cabins is limited. Again, that number is 844-872-5155 or TonyPerkins.com.
Are you feeling overwhelmed by the media telling you what to think? It is difficult to sort out what is true and what is false in the news. That's why Family Research Council President Tony Perkins writes a daily newsletter called The Washington Update. This daily email newsletter analyzes the most important events and topics at the forefront of the battles for religious liberty, the protection of life, and the defense of natural marriage, not only in Washington, but around the country. The Washington Update's daily articles cover a range of topics, from the latest election season news to underreported stories about both setbacks and successes in the fight for religious liberty, the sanctity of life, and marriage. Don't miss this critical, in-depth analysis of the day's most essential stories that are shaping our nation's future. Visit frc.org/Washington-update today to learn more and subscribe. Again, that's frc.org/Washington-update.
This Christmas, give with a purpose, a gift that protects life, marriage, and religious liberty. Here at Family Research Council, our mission is to advance faith, family, and freedom in public policy and the culture from a Christian worldview. Our work ahead includes ensuring that a conservative Supreme Court justice will be selected to repeal and replace Obamacare and do further family values policy in our country. Your giving can make an eternal difference for your community and for our future generations. And if you give between now and December 31st to Family Research Council, your gift will be matched, meaning it will be doubled by a generous donor. And any donation is tax deductible. Be fruitful in your giving this season. Call 1-800-225-4008 or frc.org/give to donate. Again, that number is 1-800-225-4008 and frc.org/give. Thank you for standing with us. FRC wishes you and your family a Merry Christmas and a Blessed New Year.
Welcome back to Washington Watch. I'm your host, Tony Perkins. Glad to have you along on this special edition as we take, a closer look, I should say, in what is happening in the Middle East in particular, but broader perspective, what's happening to our brothers and sisters around the world. We have been watching an unparalleled rise in the persecution of Christians. And I am hopeful that America will regain its voice in speaking up for the persecuted church. And I tell you, an organization that has done such stellar work in bringing attention to the plight of Christians in the Middle East and elsewhere is Open Doors USA. They have long been an organization speaking for the voiceless and bringing attention to this, and they've had their work cut out for them in the last 8 years. And it's my privilege to welcome back onto the program the president of Open Doors USA, Dr. David Curry. David, welcome back to Washington Watch.
Thank you for having me, Tony. It's always a pleasure talking with you.
Well, we just heard from Chris Mitchell at CBN News as he gave his firsthand account of the destruction by ISIS in Iraq. It isn't surprising that Iraq is ranked the second most extreme country for persecution on your 2016 World Watch list. What were some of the other countries that topped the list in terms of persecution of Christians?
Well, you have those kinds of countries like Iraq where the driver is Muslim extremism, and you're going to see those kinds of issues at play in Syria, obviously, which has a very similar footprint, although it has the dynamic of the civil war. Syria is one of those areas we're very concerned about. Actually speaking, when you talk about the strength of the Christian church, we feel like the Syrian church is really rebounding in the important spiritual areas. It's reaching out to help the others affected by the civil war and by the mass exodus of Christians in the Middle East. And the Lebanese church is a big part of that. So there are silver linings in the sense of what God is doing behind the scenes in Syria. In Iraq, you're right, it's much more grave, not clear how the church and the move of Christ is going to bounce back as steady there, but we know there's a lot of believers who want to go back home, And we think that's a good sign because we think that, that Christians need to be part of salt and light in the Middle East. So you have those kinds of countries, Tony, on the Middle East. The other on the World Watch List, the other countries that I think are of particular interest and that we want to highlight here coming forward in the new year when we release our new World Watch List are countries that maybe aren't as high on the list, but that we do a heavy amount of trade with, that we consider to be our partners here in the United States, countries like China, like India, where there's a massive rise of persecution of Christians in India, and we're doing billions of dollars of business with them. And it needs to be on the radar of this next administration. Countries like Uzbekistan, it does a huge cotton industry, forced labor of Christians and others in that country in order to keep those prices low, and companies like Target and so forth are doing businesses with these kinds of countries who are persecuting Christians on a massive level. So there are those kinds of issues too, which are embedded in the World Watch List if people want to look close enough and see those details.
So I know you're still working on, we're a month or so away from the new watch list, but any major changes you're anticipating in the 2017 watch list?
Well, yeah, what we've done this year that I think will be a surprise to people is that we're really trying to give the most accurate estimate on how many people live under persecution, how many Christians. It's very difficult for researchers to, you know, to give you an accurate number. We're going to come up with a number this year. We have all of our best researchers working on it, which will frame this issue in numbers of scale. And I'm doing a little bit of a tease here because I'm not going to tell you how many believers there are, but I will tell you that for many years we said there were 100 million Christians living under persecution, and people were kind of like, really? Well, guess what? The number will be higher than that, I guarantee you. And I think when people see the number and the statistic of how many Christians are living under persecution, there's going to be a discussion about what does it mean that in our world that so many Christians are living in harassment for their faith. It's not just that we say we want Christianity in the words of Jesus to be available and legally available to everybody everywhere, but that we want people to have, because in many places, you know, the Constitution of North Korea says that there's freedom of religion, but practically speaking, of course, there is no freedom.
Right.
So we want to go beyond just whether or not it's legal, but whether people have the right and the freedom in safety to choose their own faith in Jesus, and to read the words of Jesus in every country, and to study it and decide for themselves what they believe about who he said he was. That's fundamental to what Open Doors is about, and really it's the story of the World Watch List.
Well, that's one of the things I love about Open Doors, is that you seek to educate believers on all aspects of Christian persecution, including the theology of persecution. You know, 1 Corinthians 12:26 tells us that we are one body. When one member suffers, we all suffer. When one member is lifted up, we all rejoice. Very quickly, as we're about to run out of time here, what kind of resources does Open Doors have to help us be intentional in our prayer for the persecuted and deepen our concern for them as brothers and sisters in the body of Christ?
Well, there are so many things. For those people who like the details and the research, we always want to give in-depth research, country profiles for people. But for most of us, the stories, getting to know the people that are affected. So we have videos that people can download, show in church and small group. Just so many resources on our website, opendoorsusa.org. We want the Church of Jesus Christ, people who are called by his name, to be in love with each other, to live that calling of Philippians, to reach out and to love each other as if we were brothers and sisters.
Well, Dr. David Curry, as always, great to talk with you. I appreciate greatly the work that you do in Open Doors USA, and we look forward to working with you in 2017 to help bring greater awareness, but also to bring help to those persecuted believers around the world. Thanks so much for being with us, and have a Merry Christmas.
Well, thank you. Same to you.
All right, Dr. David Curry, to find out more, go to the website, tonyperkins.com, and follow the links over. Folks, I can speak from firsthand experience, a great organization. They're the real deal. You can feel comfortable supporting them and standing with them as they stand with persecuted Christians around the world. So check them out. Go to the website, tonyperkins.com. All right, don't go away. When we come back, we're going to be visiting with a pastor, Stephen Corey, from Jerusalem. Don't go away. We're right back.
From the ruling to uphold Obamacare's individual mandate, to the ruling to redefine marriage, to the ruling that allows the government to seize a citizen's home, these are the many important decisions that the United States Supreme Court has made recently. But did you know that each of these three decisions was determined by a one-vote margin? The Supreme Court's decisions affect all of us, and it decides about 70 cases every year. Over the next 8 years, we could get as many as 4 new Supreme Court justices. Furthermore, these justices will have a huge impact on the sanctity of human life, religious liberty, and the size and scope of government, and even parental rights. Join Family Research Council Action as we work to ensure the confirmation of Supreme Court justices who will uphold the Constitution and simply apply the law as the founders intended. Become a member today at frcaction.org. That's frcaction.org.
One of the great freedoms that most Americans enjoy is the ability to get involved in political campaigns. But what about pastors? Unfortunately, due to a little-known amendment that was passed in 1954 at President Lyndon Johnson's urging, churches and other nonprofit organizations are prohibited from making statements for or against a candidate for public office if they want to remain tax-exempt. This is just one of the many problems with the Johnson Amendment. Not only does fear of IRS action put a chill on the free speech of pastors, it restrains other nonprofit organizations from participating in the debate of public policy in their area of expertise. In addition, the IRS only rarely enforces the Johnson Amendment, causing widespread confusion about what constitutes lawful political speech and what doesn't. For more information on how to amend the Johnson Amendment, visit frc.org/Johnson Amendment. That's frc.org/Johnson Amendment.
Welcome back to Washington Watch. I'm Tony Perkins. Glad to have you along for this special edition of Washington Watch. Just before Christmas, we're pausing to go back to where it all began. In fact, a few years ago, I had the privilege of being in Israel just before Christmas and went to Bethlehem, to First Baptist Church in Bethlehem. And I'll tell you, when I think of my next guest and his family, the words from James 1, 2, and 3 come to mind. Count it all joy, my brothers, when you meet trials of various kinds, for you know that the testing of your faith produces steadfastness. Pastor Stephen Corey is the founding pastor of Calvary Church in Jerusalem, and he serves on the pastoral team at First Baptist Church of Bethlehem, where his father serves as a senior pastor. As Bible-believing Arabs, they have faced intense persecution over the years, watching family and friends martyred and their church bombed at least 14 times. Yet their resilience and their optimism shine through as they faithfully continue their ministry right there in the Holy Land where it all began. Stephen joins me now from Jerusalem to share a few stories of God's faithfulness to his family and how you and I here in the United States can stand with believers there in the Middle East. Stephen, welcome back to Washington Watch.
Tony, thank you, and all those that are listening. We are just so grateful for the church in America, for the believers in America. You guys are a symbol of hope for us, the persecuted church. Our battles are different, but the results, we overcome through the blood of the Lamb. And I am just so happy, so grateful for what God is doing through the American people. I always tell people this, Tony, and I might have shared this on the radio with you before. You go to any hotel, any travel agency, any souvenir shop, any simple restaurant in Israel, both Jewish and Arab side, you tell them what's the best kind of tour, person or nationality you'd like to have in your place. They'll say the American people. And it's because they say there's love, there's charity, they're generous, they have a sweet heart and a polite heart. These things go along and they make a difference when you think about the American people and your influence on Israel and the Middle East.
Well, and I think it goes back to the kind of the Western civilization that all began there in on the barren hills of Bethlehem with the birth of Jesus Christ, which has shaped, really, it's in the American DNA that we do have a love for people because Christ had a love for us, God had a love for us in sending Jesus to die for our sins as a gift. And of course, we're celebrating that gift of that baby. You've stood there many times overlooking the valleys and the hills of Bethlehem where Jesus was born. What does celebrating Christmas look like there in your churches, both your dad's church in Bethlehem and yours there in Jerusalem?
You know, Tony, that's, what a beautiful question. And God has blessed us with 12 active ministries in the land of Israel. Six are churches and six of the other six are outreach programs. And we are just humbled because when we stand in the middle of the city of Bethlehem or middle of Jerusalem, if you go back to 2,000 years ago, God chose the most simple city. Bethlehem was a simple town. He called it House of Bread, with Bethlehem, which means House of Bread, which through it, God feeds the rest of the world physically, emotionally, and spiritually. And then he chooses a small village attached to the city of Bethlehem, which is called the Shepherd's Fields. And he chooses the shepherds to give them the first news right along the same time he passes it along to the wise men coming from the Far East. But the beauty about this is that he chose the lowest of the lowest of during those days, a profession was a shepherd, was the lowest esteemed, and God chose those lowest to do that. And today we stand in the middle of the Christmas holidays. And remember that regardless how low and how far away you feel from God, if you are just willing to open up your heart and just listen to him, God will reach down and he will bring you back to him. And what better time to reconnect with God during the Christmas holiday, to reconnect with Christ. And in the celebrations this year, we are making sure that nobody turns Christmas into a political slogan. And we've seen that happen in the last 3-4 Christmases. And if you remember, you even covered the story where we did that big billboard, standing, you know, a big billboard in the city of Bethlehem. And it's a joyful time, but it's also a time to be standing strong, to be sure that we don't lose identity. This Christmas belongs to Jesus Christ. But it's a joyful time because the world is reminded of Jesus, and people in Bethlehem, Muslims and Christians, are reminded this holiday is for Jesus Christ.
Now, most folks don't realize, Stephen, that the population in Bethlehem now, very, very small population of Christians, less than 10% are Christian there in Bethlehem. A difficult place, as we talked about, your father's church bombed over a dozen times. How can Christians here in the United States pray for believers there in Bethlehem and the Middle East?
You know, the way believers can pray for Bethlehem and Jerusalem and the surrounding ministries that we serve is, one, pray for more boldness in our lives, that we can continue doing what we do without any fear, without any obstacles, or with overcoming. We're just always praying for God to put people on a path, Brother Tony, that can help us stand in the gap. Because being in an Arab ministry and also in a mixed Israeli-Arab ministry who loves God, stands with God's promises for Israel and the Old Testament, the New Testament, it puts us in a difficult position where we alienate ourselves from many, many other people in Israel, even Christians around the world. We are asking Christians, besides prayer, is to stand in the gap for our work so that we can continue to do what we do. And that's what people are doing, is praying for boldness, courage, for favor, and we're praying for people, for God to put people in our path.
That sounds just like...
call them that people that stand in the gap.
That sounds just like the Apostle Paul and what he asked for as well in Ephesians chapter 6. Stephen, we're out of time. I want to thank you for joining us, and I want to wish you and your mom and dad a wonderful Merry Christmas.
Thank you, Tony. Merry Christmas to everyone. God bless you guys. Thank you.
All right, folks, don't go away. On the other side of the break, former Congressman Frank Wolf joins us. Tony Perkins, President of the Family Research Council here, inviting you to join my wife, Luana, and me on an exciting adventure. Next July 29th, we'll board Holland America's a luxurious MS Eurodam in Seattle for a 7-day cruise to Alaska. You'll be joined by other believers as we study God's Word and worship Him together in the midst of some of the most breathtaking beauty in all of God's creation. Alaska is truly awe-inspiring. From stunning wildlife such as humpback whales to the Purple Mountain majesties America is known and loved for. You'll also hear the latest updates from Washington on the new Congress and administration. Come, fellowship, relax, worship, and explore with us on this memorable vacation experience that is sure to enrich your body, soul, and spirit. For more information or to book your Alaskan adventure, call 844-872-5155 or go to TonyPerkins.com. Don't miss out. The number of cabins is limited. Again, that number is 844-872-5155 or TonyPerkins.com. One of the questions I often receive from our listeners is, what can I do right here in my community to make a difference? The answer? A lot. And one of the most effective ways to make a difference right where you live is by organizing and leading a culture impact team in your church. A culture impact team, or CIT, will help keep the members of your church both informed and engaged through a wide variety of tools that we can place in your hands. Go to cultureimpact.org today for more information and order a Culture Impact Toolkit. We can provide you with all the training and materials you need to keep your church informed, inspired, and engaged. It's all free, and we can send it out to you today when you visit cultureimpact.org. Invite your friends at a church to join you in setting up a Culture Impact team. We want to help you answer the question, what can I do to make a difference? So visit cultureimpact.org. Or call us today, toll-free, 800-225-4008.
This Christmas, give with a purpose, a gift that protects life, marriage, and religious liberty. Here at Family Research Council, our mission is to advance faith, family, and freedom in public policy and the culture from a Christian worldview. Our work ahead includes ensuring that a conservative Supreme Court justice will be selected to repeal and replace Obamacare and do further family values policy in our country. Your giving can make an eternal difference for your community and for our future generations. And if you give between now and December 31st to Family Research Council, your gift will be matched, meaning it will be doubled by a generous donor. And any donation is tax deductible. Be fruitful in your giving this season. Call 1-800-225-4008 or frc.org/give to donate. Again, that number is 1-800-225-4008 and frc.org/give. Thank you for standing with us. FRC wishes you and your family a Merry Christmas and a Blessed New Year.
I'm dreaming of a white Christmas.
Welcome back to Washington Watch. I'm Tony Perkins. Glad you're with us on this special edition of Washington Watch, taking a kind of a deeper look into the origins of Christianity. We were visiting with one of our pastor friends there in Jerusalem, who grew up in Bethlehem, talking about Christians in the Middle East being persecuted. But the persecution goes beyond that. And this has become a serious issue. And America, in many ways, has lost its voice. And we've seen, as we have seen, religious liberty here in America diminish in terms of a political priority. Well, there have been tyrants and terrorists in places far away that have taken that as a cue that they can persecute Christians. Well, what does 2017 hold for those Christians in those faraway places? And we've had a lot of heavy discussions today with our guests, some light moments. But I hope it's inspired you to pray for your brothers and sisters in Christ that you've heard about. But also, I don't want us to end our time together without considering some practical steps that are necessary to raising awareness and fighting for this fundamental human right, not just an American right, this fundamental human right of the freedom of religion. My final guest today served 17 years in Congress, working tirelessly to advance international religious freedom right up to the very last day in office. Upon leaving office, he helped launch the 21st Century Wilberforce Initiative, whose purpose is to promote global protections for people of faith through advocacy, capacity building, and technology. This is one of my heroes who has served in Congress for the right reasons, doing the right things the right way. And I'm honored to have Congressman Frank Wolf with us this afternoon. Frank, thanks for joining us today on Washington Watch.
Well, thank you, Tony, and thank you for what you do. And I'm going to thank all of your supporters, because without FRC in town, it would be a different town. So thank you very much.
You know, I don't know if I've ever told you this, Frank, but it's been a number of years ago, maybe 10 years ago, so sitting in your office one day and we were discussing a number of issues. And at that point, we just had a weekend radio program. You said, you know what? We're having a hard time these days seeing the phones ring. We need a program. We need people out there that can reach Christians to get them to engage. And that was a large part of moving us to a daily radio program. We're now on over 250 stations in over 40 states. And a large part of that came from that conversation we had in your office that day, almost a decade ago.
Well, good. Well, thank you.
Look, 5 billion of the world's people face religious persecution, and about a third of people live in places where religious freedom is severely restricted. For an advocacy group, it seems like an enormous task to even know where to begin. Now, what is your approach at the Wilberforce Initiative to making the necessary inroads in this area of religious freedom?
Well, this is the issue that we work on full time. And to put it in a biblical sense, in 1 John 3:17, 18, it says, "But if anyone has the world's goods and sees his brother in need, yet closes his heart against him, how does God's love abide in him? Let us not love in word or speech, but in deed and in truth." When we went to Iraq, and we went up into the Erbil area. We went out into the Nineveh Plains. We met with all the Christian communities. They said, "Does anyone in the West, Mr. Wolf, care about us?" More biblical activity took place in Iraq than any other country of the world other than Israel. Abraham is from Iraq, and Ur is Nasiriyah. When we were there, they took us to Nahum's tomb. I touched Nahum's tomb. Daniel's buried there. Ezekiel's buried there. ISIS blew up Jonah's tomb about a year and a half ago, and the church in the West didn't even pay any attention to it. So we're seeing the end of Christianity in the cradle of Christendom. Before the war broke out, there were 1.5 million Christians there in Iraq. Now they're down to 250,000. Some even say maybe 200,000. The next 4 years will literally determine whether or not there are any Christians left in the country. When I was there, they were kept giving me this phrase. The phrase was, first the Saturday people, and then the Sunday people. And they explained the Saturday people were the Jewish community, and the Sunday people were the Christian community. In 1950, the Jewish population of Iraq was 148,000. 148,000. I said, well, how many Jewish individuals live here now? They said, Mr. Wolf, 10 elderly individuals, and it may only be 4. So what has taken place to the Jewish community, the same thing has happened to the Christian community. That's why what you're trying to do is wake up the church in the West to speak out and become an advocate for, because if we kind of look away, you know, we're all going to be singing, you know, Christmas carols this Christmas. Well, Paul couldn't take the road to Damascus. It's too dangerous. The Christian community in Syria is just, they're almost gone. We see what took place in Egypt, in Cairo, with the Coptic Christian. That's basically their Vatican was the subject of a bomb. I've been in the place, the very fact that they came in and did it. So we see Christianity under pressure all over. So our purpose is to advocate, one, to wake up the church, two, William Wilberforce, when he was trying to abolish the slave trade, said everything that takes place out of the parliament was more important than what took place in the parliament. What you're doing and your supporters are doing is impacting the culture. Everything that takes place in Congress is downstream from the culture. So by you doing the radio shows, by you guys doing your alerts, by you guys pushing and waking the church up, that then puts pressure on the Congress and on the new administration to do what is necessary. It is important to advocate. I mean, you look around the world, China, Catholic bishops in jail, Protestant pastors being arrested, pulled out of house churches, Buddhist monks are even throwing kerosene on their bodies because they're being persecuted so much by the Chinese government. A Christian woman, Asia Bibi, B-I-B-I, in Pakistan, just Google her,
right,
has been under a death sentence. A death sentence in Pakistan. We give Pakistan over $1 billion of aid. She's there for blasphemy. She took a drink of water out of a cup that some Muslim woman had. So I think you just got to bring this to the church and have the church then put pressure on the Congress. And I think we can make a tremendous difference. And I'm encouraged for the next 2 years.
Well, Congressman Wolf, you mentioned the next 4 years are going to determine what happens in some of these volatile regions of the world. Now, with a new administration and Congress arriving in Washington in just a few weeks, You know, we talk about the advocacy. Congress is only going to move as fast as the American people push them. What immediate actions need to be taken to show the world that international religious freedom is, in fact, a priority once again for America?
Well, the best thing is churches ought to be contacting their congressmen. When members of Congress come, there are going to be some bills put in. Congressman Chris Smith is going to have a whole series of bills. There are going to be some efforts with regard to aiding the Christian community in Iraq. Bring your congressman and your senator when they come back into your church. Sit them down. Tell them you're for this bill, you're for that bill, and this is the reason why, and what does this say, and how does it help? If a congressman gets 10 to 15 calls on a particular issue, 10 to 15 letters, that's going to go right onto their radar screen. And then if the churches can, every church can't come to Washington, but everyone's going to go back home to the district. They go back to Baton Rouge. They go back to Philadelphia. They go back to Harrisburg. They go back to Richmond. Tell them how much you care. And the Congress really has to be sort of forced into this. And the same thing that Wilberforce and Hannah Moore did, what they did outside of the parliament, put pressure on the parliament to end the slave trade. So really, I think the deciding factor is going to be, does the church care about the persecuted? You may remember a German Lutheran pastor, an anti-Nazi dissident, Dietrich Bonhoeffer. He had that very powerful comment. He says, silence in the face of evil is evil itself. He said, not to speak is to actually speak, and not to act is to act. So will the church speak, and then will it turn around and will it act? And so the church could literally save Christianity in the Middle East, could help the Coptic Christians. And so I think the church can make a difference, a big difference.
What has happened in the last 8 years is that this has not been a priority, and the church, for a large part, as you have pointed out, has been silent. But I think with this most recent election and the large turnout of evangelical voters that helped put the incoming president into office along with the vice president, I mean, I think that shows that they're reengaged. And I believe, as I traveled the country and I've spoken to many of them, that religious liberty, both here and abroad, was a driving factor.
I think if the evangelicals, if the Catholic community and evangelicals had not come together, and your group, I mean, those of you who were on that group, if you guys had not participated and been active, I think the Trump-Pence ticket would have lost, period. 81% of people of faith supported this ticket. They supported this ticket because this is their driving issue. I mean, they want jobs, sure. We want strong defense, but they care very deeply. And Madison, James Madison, from my state of Virginia, said conscience is the most sacred of all property. We want to have the right of our conscience to be able to follow it. And I am a little bit concerned when I hear some of the agenda of Congress. It's economics. It's do away with Obamacare. I'm with them. Do away with regulations. I'm with them. Reduce taxes. I'm with them. But I'm not hearing religious freedom. I'm not hearing the end of persecution. I'm not hearing that we want to have protection for people of faith in the United States. So I think that's where the church can do a tremendous effort, and those that supported the Trump picket and Pence ticket, to put pressure and to urge in a respectful way, we want you to do these other things, but we also want to protect religious freedom and human rights domestically and around the world.
And I do think they are very sensitive to that. I've had the conversations with them. And, of course, you and I had another conversation right after Miriam Ebrahim was released. And, in fact, you were a part of a ceremony we had at the Values Voter Summit recognizing her with our Cost of Discipleship Award. And you and I had a conversation about the need to make religious liberty a prominent issue in the upcoming election. That's been a few years ago. And, in fact, it was a major issue. The major issue, but it was a major issue, as even Donald Trump got out and started talking about the Johnson Amendment, which dealt with domestic religious liberty, the freedom of churches to speak into the political realm. So they are sensitive to it. Of course, as you served with Vice President-elect Mike Pence, you know his heart, his passion for these issues. So I am optimistic. But there's the current, we're going against the current I mean, just a few days back, on December the 10th, the United Nations observed the Human Rights Day, marking the day that the United Nations General Assembly adopted the Universal Declaration of Human Rights in Paris back in 1948. But yet the United Nations Security Council has been almost silent on the terror against Christians and other religious minorities in the Middle East. What is behind the apathy on this issue in the United Nations? That's another front that we're going to have to battle on this issue of religious liberty, as well as domestically and as in other parts of the world as well.
They've been totally silent. They have been a failure. In fact, we have with us this week Sister Diana and Father Benico from Iraq. They think the UN has been a waste. The UN has done nothing. What it will take is for President Trump and Vice President Pence to tell their representative at the UN to speak out, to push and push. The reason the UN hasn't done very much, if anything, because this administration hasn't been forward that. Samantha Power, who was our representative up there, I've been disappointed in her. She did that classic book called Problems from Hell that everyone read about speaking out. But she got up there and said almost nothing. I mean, Sister Diana can't believe what the UN has failed to do. But they haven't heard it from the administration. It hasn't come out of the White House. You haven't seen a major speech with regard to, I mean, the president went to Cairo and gave the major speech. There hasn't been one with regard to human rights. So you can drive the UN. If our person at the UN, and we pay 22 to 25% of the UN dues, 22 to 25% comes from American taxpayer. We should be driving this. We should be speaking out on this. We should have to speak out with regard to what's taking place in China. Do you know in Turkey, which is a member of NATO, there is an evangelical pastor from Montreat, California, Presbyterian PCA pastor that's been in jail for over 75 days. 75 days, and he's called a terrorist. He's a Presbyterian pastor, and no one from this government has spoken out. No one. He's in Montreat, North Carolina. Turkey is part of NATO. So if our State Department, if our Secretary of State, if our Assistant Secretary, if the White House were speaking out, so I think it's all going to really have to come out of the White House. And I think what you said about Mike Pence. Mike Pence is one of the most honest, decent, ethical, and moral people that I ever served with. Bar none. This is who this guy really is. So I think that's where the opportunity really is. But why aren't people speaking out against the Turkey's government doing that? You know, when I went to Iraq, at the end of every meeting, I said to them, who's helping ISIS? Do you know what they said? Saudi Arabia. Saudi Arabia. Qatar. And Turkey. Turkey was allowing people to fly to Istanbul, reposition, and go south, go in. So if they're hearing it from our own government, then I think the UN will be a lot. The whole world can change. You remember?
It's up to the church to make it a priority.
Dr. King, you know, Martin Luther King said a very powerful, I pulled it out for this interview. He said, in the end, we will remember not the words of our enemies, but the silence of our friends. Are we in the church, not the friends of the persecutor? Are we in the church, not the friends of the persecuted church in Iraq, of the Protestant evangelical pastor who's being rounded up and taken away, of the church in China that's having the crosses taken off, of Asa Bibi, whose family is living in secret, and she's in there maybe losing her teeth in prison, having been there for 6 years. Are we not the friends? And so the church literally holds. This is the moment.
This is our time.
The church can make the difference.
This is our time. Congressman Frank Wolf, thank you so much for all that you have done, all that you're doing, and thank you for joining us today.
Thank you, Tony. Thanks for your good work. God bless you, buddy.
Bye. All right. Folks, to find out more about the outstanding work that Congressman Frank Wolf is doing, go to the website, TonyPerkins.com. Follow links over. All right, out of time for today. I want to say Merry Christmas to you, and I want to leave you once again with the words of the Apostle Paul. You've done everything you can do when you've prayed, when you've prepared, and when you have taken your stand. By all means, keep standing.
Washington Watch with Tony Perkins is a production of the Family Research Council in Washington, D.C. For more information on anything you heard today, or if you'd like to find out how you can support the ongoing efforts of the Family Research Council, visit TonyPerkins.com.